For your future can feel overwhelming, but something this important deserves attention. Take simple steps today at countryfinancial.com/simple steps. This is your home for the UNLV Rebels. Now, here are your hosts, Russ Langer and Caleb Herring.
Born and raised, the official home of the Rebels on the road, the program presented by Findlay Toyota, and the program is the Tony Sanchez Radio Show. Tony Sanchez, head coach of the UNLV Rebel football team. Caleb Herring aboard. Coach, how goes it?
Goes good. Getting closer and closer. These Friday games come fast.
They sure do. Caleb, what's happening?
Oh, not much, man. These Friday games, like Coach said, swinging around quick, getting us all a little bit off schedule, but it'll be exciting to get back out there and watch some football this week, this Friday.
Well, we're going to talk all about the New Mexico Lobos, which, of course, the Rebels' next opponent coming up this Friday, back-to-back Friday games. Rebels losing against BYU at Sam Boyd Stadium, the final home game, senior night, 31-21. And, Coach, the Rebels didn't play completely poorly, but they came up a little bit short.
Yeah, they did. I mean, we did some real good things, and at times we struggled. You know, I mean, you look at the first half, you know, dominated the first half as far as time of possession and yards. Unfortunately, we had a first and 10 from the 22 and first and 10 from the 17, and one of those resulted in a missed field goal after taking a sack, you know. And then that second drive we got down, then we throw a pick in the end zone. And really, even if those both end up being field goals, you end up with your six-point lead, kind of changes the dynamic of the atmosphere of what's going on. And even if they play the way they do, you're not chasing those 7 points all game. So great opportunities there. Defense came out, started off well. And then when you got towards that latter part of the second quarter, once they tied at 7-7, you know, they end up giving up a big drive right before the half. Then they come out of the half, score a touchdown, score a second touchdown, miss a field goal, score a third touchdown. So that five series stretch where they scored four touchdowns, that's big. We can't allow that to happen. And then we had opportunities down, you know, towards the end. Guys kept battling back and making it a 7-point game, and just got to execute, you know, for a longer duration of time. They did a good job of being physical, and thought they got after us up front a little bit. And you know, we got to just be more stout and execute earlier in games and be more consistent on defense. And those are games you can win.
That two-game stretch where the two-game win streak was kind of marked with good first halves where he's competitive, finishing in the end zone and the red zone whenever he did get down there. Early in last week's game against BYU, that same offensive execution in the red zone just wasn't there, whether it was taking the sack early that ended up costing points. I mean, the field goal was still within range, if not for the win, I think. It still was a makeable field goal, but then also throwing the interception. The two big plays early in the game down in the scoring zone that really came back to haunt you late in the game. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. You never know how the game's going to play out, but that just goes to show those trips in the red zone are valuable.
They're huge, you know, and that's why you have to have great situational awareness. You need to know when you're in a third and long situation, if you got something, great, take it. If not, you throw the ball away, you line up, you kick the field goal, you're in a good situation there. And, you know, we didn't do that. So, again, the learning opportunities, and, you know, you'd rather execute them than learn from them.
Right.
But, you know, bottom line is, you know, we got to continue to work on that and keep preaching it and teaching it and move on.
Now, you mentioned that, of course, the team losing out on those early points, that changed the atmosphere. It can change a lot of the dynamic, as you point out, play calling, all kinds of things.
100%. You know, one of the biggest things was going into the game, BYU's throwing the ball an average of 78% of the time. So they're a heavy, heavy pass team. Them losing both their quarterbacks, us allowing them to be comfortable, allowed them to just go ahead and just commit to running the football, something they haven't really done all year. And it's something that they're pretty good at. You know, when you look at that offensive line, it's a big group of guys. They just played patient, and our guys hung in early. And as the game went on, we kind of wore down up front, and you saw start to get gashed later on. The first half, I think we won time of possession, something like 18-something to 11-something. Huge time of possession battle. Third quarter, it was even, I believe, 7-7, 7:30 to 7:30, something like that. And then they dominated the fourth quarter. We just couldn't get off the field with a worn down defense. So we needed to take advantage of some of those scoring opportunities early to allow us a little bit of a cushion to change kind of the dynamics of what they're doing out there.
And do you think not scoring those red zone opportunities defensively after getting, I think, three stops in a row where they held BYU from getting into the end zone or putting any points on the board? It was 0-0 there for a long time in the first quarter. Do you think not scoring offensively affects the mindset of your defense? Like the defense is saying, well, we've been stopping them three times in a row. We're not getting any points out of it. It's still tied up. How do we overcome this if our offense can't score? Do you think that wears on them?
No, I don't think so, because there's been times where we've scored at will and they've hung. I mean, I think they know there's an ebb and flow there. But I think what really – I think the reality of it is we're not going to be able to do that all night. We're not going to be able to line up and just stop people all night long. We haven't done that all year. There's been times where we've played good on defense and we've gotten our stops. And, you know, I don't expect those guys right now with who we are to go on out there and to shut somebody down the entire game. But we need to be able to be more consistent about not allowing them to have so many consecutive drives where they have success. So early in the game when they are shutting them down, that whole first quarter, offense has to take advantage of it, give it a little bit of a cushion. And then, you know, as the game gets competitive later on, again, we talked about those five series. Somewhere in there needs to be a punt. Somewhere in there needs to be a turnover. You just can't allow five series in a row to keep on going. So, again, offensively, you have to take responsibility and not getting those early points. And defensively, you know, you've got to be able to sustain for a longer period of time.
You mentioned that the early opportunities. We talked about how Johnny Stanton took a sack. First and 10 they had on the 22, and then they missed the field goal. Then the next possession, first and 10 and the 17. Now, we talked about the interception in the end zone, but the play before that, it looked like Devontae Boyd had a step on his man in the end zone, and Johnny kind of overthrew him.
He did. Yeah, just one of those deals. You know, you got to set your feet. You know, you got to lay it out there. So, again, you know, the opportunities are there. The plays are there. We got to execute them. So, you know, when it comes down to those things, you know, you just got to do a better job of executing the play that's right there in front of you, because we had two scoring opportunities on that. And, you know, and even on that last play, on that third down, the call was backwards on the backside, so we had a backside, you know, route that should have been there that wasn't. So, you know, they're all things that we just got to get better at and continue to execute.
Johnny, the two games prior, hadn't made those kind of mistakes that we saw that maybe were kind of a learning curve mistake for Armani early in the season, where you're taking sacks when you could have just thrown it away or things like that. Johnny hadn't done that until last week, and it was a little bit discouraging for me because it's almost like he took a step back for some reason in senior year, where it looked like he was poised, making all the right decisions, and then once he took that sack, it seemed like that kind of snowballed into some inaccurate throws, not just the one to Boyd in the end zone. There was a couple that he missed on that he was making in the weeks prior that seemed like it rattled his cage a little bit. And those few key plays here or there could have changed the whole demeanor of the game. So Johnny, I think, was rattled a little bit after that first sack. And I think he realized how big of a mistake that was, from my perspective looking at it. And that kind of carried through him for a while. It took him a while to kind of overcome that early mistake.
Yeah, you know, not many of us have ever done it. I mean, I know I never played it, but if you played the quarterback position or if you've just been around it, it's probably the most difficult thing of all of sports. There's nothing like it. It's not like being a point guard or, you know, closing pitcher. I mean, literally everything's on you, the calls, the checks, the reads, the audibles. There's the physicality of it, then, you know, the execution of the play. So, you know, Johnny's done a really good job of being a great team guy and playing hard. And, you know, we're two games away from, you know, possibly being in a bowl game. We wouldn't be there without him. So, you know, we're not going to cast any blame. We could run the ball a little bit better. You know, we can create some more turnovers, which would create more opportunities. So there's enough to go around, from coaching to players to everything. You know, we're all going to own this thing together. So it's definitely not all on Johnny. Could he have played better? Absolutely. You know, could defense have played better? Absolutely. Could we have executed better? You know, can we call better plays? There's enough. You know, I think the biggest thing with us now is we've gotten to a point maturity-wise where we all just own it together. So it's never one guy, but we also reflect and realize that the details matter. They're everything. I mean, you've got to – when you have opportunities and you're playing, you know, in tight football games, the person who executes better, that's the fundamental stuff. I mean, the decision-making, you know, ball on time, tucking the ball away, again, situational awareness, getting lined up right. I mean, just doing all the little things right. Really, if you consistently do that, you're going to win a lot of football games, and the team that does it better is going to win.
It looked very much, Coach, like the defense did play very well in the first quarter before it softened some.
It did. It played a great first quarter. I mean, you know, again, I got a bunch of three and outs, got off the field, and when we got deeper into that second quarter, we started giving up chunks, you know, and it was really disappointing to see that long drive. You know, we tie it up 7-7, getting ready to go into half. We know they're getting the ball coming out of half, and we give up a length of the field drive. You know, that was disappointing to see. And then coming out of the locker room, I mean, right away, four plays, 75 yards. I mean, that's, you know, you get a little hot when you see that, you know, and, you know, we had to talk about that a little bit. That was disappointing. You know, we got to do better than that. At that point, they're not tired. I mean, they're coming out of halftime. Just got to do a better job. And we had some guys that overran gaps, you know, overshot. You know, you got to realize where you are. You got to be assignment sound, you know, gap sound. And, you know, we weren't on a couple of those, and they caused big gash runs. We had the, I believe it was the first play of the second half. you know, we have a stunt coming off one edge, and you know, we got a guy that lines up wrong, and so we end up with two guys stunting off the edge and nobody in the middle of the defense, and we get gashed right up the seam. So those are the type of things that, you know, we just got to do a better job at.
Now, one of the things that the BYU offense employed, the Rebels haven't seen a lot this year, was that wildcat, which led to their first touchdown.
Well, they did a good job. I mean, you know, that's how you balance numbers out in the running game. But we knew that was going to be there. I mean, yeah, we'd seen it earlier a little bit against Utah State, you know, in that game when they had a bunch of guys go down. So we knew it was a possibility. And early on in the first quarter and such, we did a good job of handling it. But as the game went on, I mean, it was just something that was really tough to deal with.
It was a little bit of a dose of your own medicine, because it's one of the things you talked about with the offensive side, the quarterback power and running, using the quarterback as a runner, designed runner. It adds a blocker to the box. And I think at times that just the box count just was outnumbered, and there was one too many, you know, to shed a block. Everybody had to shed a block and make a play, and down the stretch, like you said, those plays just weren't being made.
No, I mean, you saw it, man. Again, that big offensive line, they did a good job of just getting bodies on bodies, and we were struggling getting off those blocks as the game went on. You know, we wore down. I mean, when you look at it, I think they're leading rush for 200 and some odd yards. I mean, that's tough. You can't allow that to happen. And they won the turnover battle, which is huge.
Oh,
I mean, 2-0.
Huge.
So I think if you win the turnover battle by two, you're predicted to win 91% of the time. So, I mean, those are things you got to do a better job with.
Early on, when the defense was shining fairly brightly, one of the guys who broke through for a big sack was Nick Dadashian. Nice to see him get
a
ball.
Yeah, he did some great things. I mean, man, he gave them fits early in the game, did a great job playing with his hands, came underneath one of those blocks to get that sack. And, you know, Dash is a young guy. He's a sophomore. He's starting to play more and more, and, you know, he's got a great football ahead of him. There were some great individual efforts. You look at what Darren Woods did. You look at Presley, you know, some of the big plays. Boyd had some big plays. Lexington does what he does. I mean, you know, he had a tough 88 yards, you know, but just consistently, you know, defensively at times, Farrell did some good things, struggled at times, you know. Nick Dadashian played well. And early on the game, you know, Hughes and Pops, they did some really good things. But, you know, it's not – 3 or 4 or 5 guys having great games, just 11 guys being consistent all the time. And, you know, and we struggle with that.
Talking on the offense, you mentioned Brandon Presley and Darren Woods, who started off the year kind of slow because, you know, the touches just weren't there, whatever the case may be. Maybe offense opened up a little bit for them, but that has to be a welcome sight for those two, especially Presley, who's made some explosive plays the last couple of weeks, to get them going in the offense, kind of open up the offense a little bit.
No doubt. I mean, you're seeing Brandon. You see the type of explosive player he is, the problems he causes people in one-on-one matchups. His ball skills are phenomenal. Darren's just a big, strong kid. I mean, he's a son of a gun to take down. So with his physicality, especially playing in the middle, he does some good things. And then you see the pup, Drew Techman, had a real nice catch, and, you know, they're making plays. So it's good to see a variety of guys stepping up, and when they get the opportunity, making plays. It's just, it creates, you know, and when you're talking about these guys, you're talking about, you know, Drew Techman, who's a true freshman, and, you know, Presley and Woods, that are both sophomores. And, you know, I mean, this is a young group of guys that are really coming of age.
When the Rebels tied the game at 7, they scored on a Lexington Thomas touchdown run. Lex makes some very big plays during that drive.
Yeah, that was a difficult touchdown to get. You know, first and second down was about, you know, half a yard. That half a yard felt like a mile for a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And then on that third down, he did a great job of just, you know, just skimming to the edge and, you know, laying it out there a little bit and, you know, and keeping his knees off the ground and getting the ball in. So that was a big-time run.
Well, we were kind of speculating. We were a little bit surprised up top that Johnny, with his big bulk, didn't try to just sneak it in there from in close.
Yeah, you know what? We talked about that on the headsets, actually. And that was probably going to be our next call.
Right.
You know, and if we would have done it on first down, it probably would have been better because they weren't lined up in the A-gaps. You know, they had the true nose, but then they vacated the A-gaps. After that, on second down, they went ahead and played double A's, so make it a little bit more difficult.
Had it been fourth down? Might that have been the call?
Oh, we would have went for it, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, now I have a question, because I know a lot of offenses, whenever you go into center and you have a design play call, the quarterback has an option to just say wedge or, you know, give a little tap on the center's butt, like, hey, we're going in for this one. Is that something that you guys have installed where if Johnny comes up and sees no A gap, is he allowed, does he have that freedom to just say,
he does,
look, we're sneaking this thing?
He does. You know, in our offense, so we're not under center all the time. You know, so there, if we're in the gun, then no, he doesn't have that option. He stays in it. But if we are under center, depending on the down and distance, he does have that option.
All right, here's another question for you, Coach. The Rebels went into halftime down 14-7. But during that drive, when BYU broke the 7-7 tie, At one point, they thought that Canada had fumbled. Jason Pfau had forced the ball loose, but the replay official said no, and that obviously that was very huge before halftime.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those deals where, you know, they consider the forearm down, you know, so he's got the ball in the hand and he reaches out, and if any part of that forearm touches the ground, then the runner's considered down. So that's what they ruled on. And, you know, there's a couple. I mean, even later in the game, you know, it's a little frustrating. You know, you look back on it, and we get a legitimate strip, and the ball comes out, and they said that they blow the whistle. And, you know, once the whistle's blown, regardless of a review, it's dead, right?
Right.
And there's so many times in the year where no whistle's blown, and they do it on purpose to see if the ball does come out, and then there you get a whistle blow. It's like, what, you know, it's a little frustrating. Well, why are you blowing the whistle? Really frustrated, too, on the penalty they called him Boyd. I mean, you know, I'm sitting down, and I'm watching the Miami game, and, you know, the guy scores a touchdown, and, you know, he's running to the sideline. He might be 2 or 3 yards from the sideline, takes his helmet off, they're celebrating. Not causing spectacle, just doing his thing. Boyd has a great touchdown, runs off the field. He's maybe 10 yards from our box, not doing anything crazy, and they call 15-yarder for him taking his helmet off. And he wasn't on the field. He's on the sideline. So, I don't know. Just my opinion.
I absolutely agree with you. That's one of those spirit of the rule plays where, you know, yeah, you're not supposed to take your helmet off on the field, but clearly he's making his way off the field, even if he has a step or two on the field. It's like that has nothing to do with the spirit of that rule.
Well, it's not a player celebrating taking his helmet off to bring attention to himself. I mean, he's in the process of going over to his teammates on the sidelines, and he is off the field. So, you know, we had an interesting discussion about that.
But I'm not a lip reader, but it was easy to see what you were saying. He was out of bounds.
Yeah, that's all I said.
That's all you said.
That was it.
That's right. Then you asked the official how his family is.
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to take our first break from the Tony Sanchez Radio Show. Russ Langer along with Caleb Herring and the coach, Tony Sanchez, and this is Learfield. Welcome back to the Tony Sanchez Radio Show, live from Born and Raised, the official home of the Rebels on the road. Russ Langer, head coach Tony Sanchez, and Caleb Herring here also. Finley Toyota's 2017 model clearance is underway. All 2017 models are being sold at clearance prices. Come in today for the best selection at Finley Toyota. And another reminder that the Tony Sanchez Radio Show is being streamed live on the all-new UNLV Game Day app. Stay up to date with your Rebel football team stats, game schedules, and score notifications. And, of course, this coming Friday, you can listen live as Rebels take on the New Mexico Lobos at 6:30 Pacific time, 7:30 out of New Mexico. Search UNLV Game Day in the iTunes and Google Play Store right now. All right, so we've gotten as far as halftime in the Lobo game against BYU. Second half, before we get into some of the particulars, Coach, BYU, one of the things they sport is a big offensive line, and it seemed like they did well to wear the Rebels down as the second half really got deep into it.
Yeah, you know, they hadn't done that a lot all year. I mean, they've kind of gotten away from using that big old line and running the football most of the year. Like, I mean, they were just throwing the ball all over the yard. I mean, like I said, it's 78% pass. I mean, they just hadn't really done it a bunch, and, you know, and you see how capable they are of it. So I think with those quarterbacks being down, it really forced them to be a little bit more one-dimensional, which they struggled with early in the game, but as the game went on, they really focused on it and just kept sticking to it, and it wore us down a little bit. So, they're a big physical group of guys, no doubt about it.
I think one of the things that a lot of people take for granted is that how hard it is for the front seven, linebackers and defensive linemen, how hard it is to get up there, take on a block and shed it, and then make the tackle. And if you're doing that over and over and over again, like with no depth, you know, no breather in sight, with, you know, the depth chart just not being there with injuries or what have you late in the season, how hard it is to continue to do that into the second half. Like you said, the defense started off great, and they were doing a good job. As it went on, that, like you said, that huge offensive line, shedding those blocks is tiresome. And, having seen it done and how much effort it takes for one play, you know, just one play on defense, and not knowing where the play's going, the offense always has to jump on you in that way, and then continuing to try to keep that effort up is just tough, man. It's just tough on their bodies.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, everything said is right on, and again, as the game went on, we wore down, and that's why you got to get some of those stops. I mean, we were able to move the ball well offensively in the second half. You know, I mean, we came out and scored 14 points and, you know, got ourselves, you know, in the game, you know, twice, you know, down by seven. Got to get one stop. You got some momentum going, and that's why it's so important to get off the field on those crucial third down situations, get that rest.
When the Rebels were down 21-7 in the third quarter, they put together a nice drive, and it culminated in the touchdown toss to Presley, one of the best end zone catches the Rebels have made this year.
Oh, yeah, it was a great play, and, you know, nice toss up, soft hands, you know, made a beautiful catch, and again, put the game within 7 points. So, you know, we did that one more time after that also.
With three times there within a touchdown.
That's right. A couple of key catches that Presley made, a big play, and then that one in the end zone. Talking about the opportunity to get off the field, there was one major opportunity that Dalton Baker had defensively to get off the field. And I always say there's like a karma in football. If the play is given up to you and you miss out on it, whether it be throwing the right touchdown pass, missing it, missing an interception like that, it's almost like the football gods have like a certain karma, a way to make that really come back to haunt you, because it was almost a gift-wrapped interception that Dalton had. I know he's probably kicking himself about it, but opportunities like that in a game like that have to be magnified to the nth degree.
Well, you know, if you're going to win games like that, you got to make plays like that. You know, I mean, you got a great opportunity. You know, the ball's misthrown, you know, right to you, and there's nothing but green in front of you. You know, you're probably going to get a good 30, 40-yard return after it, you know. And we had some momentum on offense. It just gone down and scored. And, you know, those are plays you have to be able to make as a football team to in order to win that game. You know, and then we don't, and then they end up kicking the field goal, and you make it a two-score game, and now you got your back against the wall, you know, kind of got the eight ball behind you. So, yeah, you know, as we move on and we talk about, you know, going on and being successful and consistently winning games and giving ourselves chances, we have to make some of the plays we've made those last couple of weeks. And, you know, and on Friday night against BYU, they made more of those plays than we did.
And in the second half, maybe the best moment for the Rebels on offense when they were down 28-14. They put together another decent drive, and the key play on 4th and 11, Johnny found Brandon Presley on the sideline for a nice gain to get that critical first down. Then the touchdown pass to Boyd that made it 28-21.
Yeah, it was a great drive. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, you're down. You know, you got to get a score to get yourself back in the game. And, I mean, those two drives you just talked about, they're great drives, and we do some really good things, you know, especially offensively, you know, in that second half. And it was good to see. I mean, it's real easy to kind of fold your tents, and our guys did. I mean, the one thing that was very obvious is our guys played hard all night, you know, and it, sometimes they didn't execute at the highest level and could have done a couple things better. But as far as the fight in our guys, it's been impeccable.
I know that's encouraging to see the fight always, but as just watching the game as a fan, it's a little bit infuriating to watch how good the team is in spurts. Like you said, that drive was it was a great drive, a response drive to a touchdown, trying to come back and cut into a lead. Or even earlier, you know, there were some commanding drives that didn't end in points. But to see those lulls, like to start the second half, a little bit of a lull offensively and defensively, how infuriating is that as a coach to know that you're capable of doing so much better, and then watch your team kind of squander those opportunities?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the one thing about it is just the maturity that everyone has to have, you know, and understand there's going to be, I mean, I don't care who you are, what game you watch, and, I mean, there's ebb and flows throughout the course of the game. So, you know, early on, you know, it really frustrates you watching, you know, coming out of the locker room, watching them go score, and then you get a three and out. But there's no panic. I mean, you're fine. You just got to rally. You got to keep going. And we did on one side of the ball. We didn't on the other. I mean, offense found themselves and put two great scoring drives together and did that and, you know, made up for some of the stuff they did earlier in the game. But when you go back and you look at the body of work, it's important for all the guys to understand is you're not going to score every possession. It's unrealistic. But you can execute and make them stop you, make them beat you, you know, get a couple of first downs, flip field position. When you do have opportunities, you have to take advantage of them. So at the beginning of the game, when you're down there, you got a point. I mean, you 100% need to have points every time you get within that 20-yard line, 22, 20. You know, you want to make sure you get points on the board in some facet. Right? And two times down there not getting any, that can't happen. And, you know, now the guys, I mean, they understand how important that is. We've seen that at times throughout the course of the season. But, you know, it's one of those deals where you go back, both teams do. I mean, I'm sure they go back and look, oh, man, we could have really put the game away if we did this. And we're looking at it saying, oh, we could have had the advantage early on in the game and put the game away if we had done this. And so I think both teams have great opportunities every week to speak about those things, and it's about the guys owning it afterwards and being mature and going out and working on it all the way through practice and becoming a better team so it doesn't happen again.
You mentioned that missed interception by Dalton Baker, which we touched on a moment ago. If he makes that catch, the Rebels probably have the ball at about the 5-yard line. Obviously, they got to put some plays together to get into scoring range, but that's going to change the whole dynamic of the entire quarter.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you got momentum, you're fired up, crowd's into it, you're down 7, you have the ball, you have every opportunity, now it's on you, you know. and the one thing that's frustrating, I believe, in the last three games, I don't think we have a turnover, you know. We didn't have a turnover last game, and I look back at the Hawaii game. We recovered an onside kick, but we didn't have a defensive turnover, and I don't believe we had one. We had a turnover on a punt against Fresno, but not a defensive turnover. So, you know, when you're sitting there at 12 quarters, you haven't created a turnover. That's something you need to do. We dropped a couple of interceptions against Hawaii down the stretch. It would have slammed the door shut right away, allowed it to go down to the last play of the game. Had an opportunity for the interception in that BYU game down 7, which would have been huge. And, you know, at some point, you got to make the plays.
Now, you mentioned turnovers, and it's certainly not a coincidence that in the 6 games the Rebels have lost, they've committed 12 turnovers. And in the games that they've won, the 4, they've committed 2.
Well, there you go. I mean, we talk about it all the time. You know, you win the turnover battle, you have a great opportunity to win the game. Hey, it's about red zone, it's about third downs, and it's about turnovers. And, I mean, yards don't mean a whole lot, and not a lot less than people think. You know, when you sit there and you look at the yards stat, I mean, we had more yards than BYU. Well, great. Didn't win us the game, you know. Again, it really comes down to your efficiency on third down, your ability to be efficient in the red zone, and your ability to create turnovers and not turn the ball over. If you do those things, you have a high degree of having an ability to have success.
That's what I talked about in the post-game show, talking about Johnny's specifically on the yards issue, because a lot of people get enamored with this stat game and then, oh, he threw for 300 yards. That's an amazing game. But I'm sure Johnny, after that game, would have said that he played one of his poorer games of the season because of the crucial mistakes that he made, the sack, the interception, a couple interceptions that really changed the tempo of the game. So those hidden plays that really go to affect the game were, I think, more important than the yards and the stats and the achievements because, I mean, all in all, points are what contribute to success. And if you don't finish with points, yards mean nothing.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that is the stat that matters. Who has the most points when that last whistle blows, you know, when it's all said and done? I mean, that's all you really care about. So there's different ways to get it done, and there are some games where, you know, you're going to have to score a bunch of points. There's some games where you got to be blue-collar and, you know, win it being a little bit more conservative. But the bottom line is to strategize yourself to a point where you can go out and walk off the field with more points than them. You know, it's not about having more yards than them. It's about having more points.
After the next break, we'll talk more about the upcoming opponent, New Mexico, this coming Friday. But certainly, as you point out, Coach, the BYU probably ran the ball more than they had all season in this game because they did win the Battle of the Trenches.
Yeah, no doubt they did. You know, they did run the ball more than they had all year, so and they did a good job of it. But, again, you know, we had plenty of opportunities. I mean, it was a game going right down to the end. I mean, it's a 7-point game with, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes left in the ball game, and you got to get a stop, you know, you got to get the turnover, and then you got to go down and score, you know. So, not a bad football team. You know, when you compare them to some of the Mountain West teams, I think if they're in the Mountain West, I think they have a different record right now. You know, they're a pretty good football team, but they play a tough schedule. You know, they've suffered through some injuries, but it's still a game we feel like we should have gone out and won. You know, we had a lot of momentum. We had a lot of opportunity, and we still have that opportunity. It's just now there's no margin of error. So, you know, it would have been nice to have gotten that one and, you know, had to win one with 2 to go. It takes a little bit of pressure off the boys, even though you want to win both of them. But now you're in this situation where, hey, 8 quarters to go. You got to win all of them.
Have you, the last thought on the game, because it was senior night, so I have to mention it, was there any special message or special, you know, attention that the seniors got from after this game from you? I know personally, it's your last home game with some of your senior guys that have been with you for a while.
The night before the game, I talked to them quite a bit about how much I appreciated them and this and that. But you know what? That's going to be more for, you know, that Reno game. You know, I mean, it's the last time at home. And that's a special deal. Their families in there and such. But, you know, we're going to hold hands. You know, we got to do a great job this week. But that last game, you know, when you walk out there holding hands, you know, you want to make sure that you leave it all on the line for those guys. And, you know, they leave. You know, as we're building here, our senior class is a great opportunity to start living the legacy, you know, that we want to have here for a long, long time. And that opportunity is in front of them. And you look at guys like Mike Hughes, Jason Fowl, you know, Boyd, Kyle Saxlid, you know, Johnny Stanton, Kurt Palandek. You know, Jeandre Sanders, you know, Brian Keyes. I mean, I can go on and on and on about so many different guys. You know, Robert Jackson. I mean, just, they've done such a good job of just believing in what we're doing and working hard every day for it and not being discouraged and showing up. I mean, we're sitting there with 2 games to go. We're in the middle of December, and we're still talking about having a possibility to go to a bowl game. And early on, it was tough sledding. I mean, we're sitting there, you know, you're sitting there at 2-4, and you got a bunch of, you got 6 more to go, and it could swing one way or the other. And our guys, I'll tell you what, man, they knocked it out of the park a couple times and fought themselves back into it. So I'm proud of them, and I'd really love to be able to see them, you know, get into the postseason, be able to leave that legacy for the next generation.
Sports Information Director Mark Wallington will be our special guest the second half of the show before we take the next break. I'll remind you that at Findlay Toyota, we speak 14 different languages. No matter how you say it, you'll always get a great deal at Findlay Toyota. Back with a lot more second half of the show coming up on the Tony Sanchez Radio Show here on Learfield. Ladies and gentlemen, Findlay Toyota is a proud supporter of UNLV football, has been ever since it opened. Findlay Toyota and UNLV Athletics, one great team. And don't miss a big play while you're checking your phone. Access the Contour Sports app from Cox with voice control or through the main menu and get stats and scores on your TV screen without interrupting the game. Visit cox.com/contour to learn more. Head coach Tony Sanchez with us along with Caleb Herring. The New Mexico Lobos coming up on Friday, 6:30 Pacific. Game will be on ESPN2. Lobos have not won since October 1st, so they're fighting a losing streak of their own.
Yeah, they are. You know, they're an interesting group. They've turned the ball over quite a bit as of late. I mean, a lot. I mean, you look at, like, just 2 weeks ago, we're watching that Utah State game, and they're moving the ball up and down the field on those guys, and I believe three times inside the 15-yard line they turned the ball over, and that's a 20, you know, that's a 14-point game. So they're a team that, you know, they struggled last week, you know, against the pass big time. A&M didn't even try to run the ball on them. They just, you know, against Cover Zero, just threw the ball down the field over and over and over and just took advantage with athletes. But, you know, you look at some of the games they've played, they're kind of an interesting team. You know, Fresno State goes out there and beats them handily, 38-0. And then you look at them, they beat Air Force by 18 points, you know, and then they lose 3 points to Colorado State, and then they turn the ball over a ton and lose four. I mean, they lose to Boise by 14 also, and that was a seven-point game the whole night. So they're an interesting team. I mean, they're, you know, when they show up, they're pretty good, but they've had some lulls, and, you know, and they've kind of gone on this streak. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who comes out, you know, for them and, you know, and rallies and ready to go. I mean, their team coming off a 9-1 season. So they've got a bunch of seniors, I believe 21 of them, that know what it is to win. So I don't see those guys quitting. You know, I mean, they're going to want to come out and end their season on a good note, senior night. You know, they got two games left. They got us, and then I believe, who do they got after that? Us and then San Diego State. Right. So, yeah, so if I'm then, I'm looking at that, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, it was funny. I listened to Bob Davies' press conference, and he said, it was a quote, they asked him, like, you think you guys are quit? Do they have enough left in the tank? And he goes, well, I know we have enough left for this Friday night. So
oh, man.
I shared that with our guys. So.
some bulletin board material.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Ooh,
yeah. You know, and I know what he meant by that, you know, but it's, you know, it's still good to talk about with the team. So it's going to be a tough game. You know, it's, you know, we know who we are, too. I mean, it's not like we've gone out and, you know, boat raced a bunch of people either, but we've played good football at times, and we got to continue to do that. You want to see a similar effort you did against Fresno State and Hawaii and at times against BYU and, you know, at times against teams like Air Force. And we played some good football in spurts, and when we play four quarters of it, we're a pretty good football team. So I think that's what we got to do, go out and play four quarters of good football, not turn it over and create some.
You mentioned that the Lobos defensively like to play that man-to-man, cover zero. A lot of that is going to be coming at the receivers this week. So in preparation with the resurgence, the waking up, I should say, of Darren Woods, Brandon Presley, Devontae Boyd, got to be licking their chops in prep, seeing all this man-to-man and the scouting report and saying, oh, mano-a-mano, you're going to try to guard me? They got to be licking their chops this week.
No doubt about it. They're excited about it. You know, obviously they're excited about the game plan we have going in. They know they're going to get some opportunities down the field, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they adjust and what they want to do. Are they just going to sit in what they've done and then force our hand to go ahead and complete balls down the field? The biggest thing there is being accurate. You may not get them all, but you got to have a high, you know, completion percentage. You can't go out there and miss a bunch of open targets and a bunch of opportunities. So timing this week in practice is huge. And then I really believe winning this game, we're going to have to throw the ball down the field. But for us, we've got to find a way to get Lexington over 100. We've got to find a way to get ourselves into that 200-yard mark again with the ability to throw the football. We don't want to get conservative and just run. We want to be balanced. We want to be able to take vertical shots down the field. But I think we also need to be able to reestablish that run game. A couple weeks in a row, even with the win against Hawaii, we weren't able to run the ball as stoutly as we had been. And I know we're a little banged up front, but we still got to find a way to get that done and move the needle there.
We've talked all season about the importance of turnovers. New Mexico, the thing that jumps up off the stat page at you when you look at them as a team is that turnover ratio, which is just not good. They're near the very bottom nationally in that area. So it would appear, at least on paper, if the Rebels can take care of the ball, they'd be in reasonably good shape.
There's no doubt. I mean, if we take care of the ball and, again, create some turnover, you know, they're a triple option offense. They, in their greatest comfort zone, they are – running the ball 70 times and throwing it 10. That's where they want to live. And I think the teams that have made them get out of that have had a better opportunity to win the football game. And sometimes you get them out of that by being productive on offense and creating turnovers and forcing them to have to be a little bit more aggressive. But they're more than happy to go out and win a 17-10 ball game. I mean, that's kind of what they want to do. They're one of the better offenses in the conference as far as yards goes. They chewed up a little bit, but, again, they turn the ball over. So we've got to do a great job of being handsy in there, getting hands on the ball. You know, first guy secure it, second guy rip it out. Again, assignment sound, you know, the triple. You know, we know how – I mean, you could be playing great football and go play a triple team and they can embarrass you. So we got to do a really good job of playing four quarters of sound football and, again, just communicating really, really well.
Defensively, I know you guys had a pretty good, solid game plan against Air Force in the first half, especially. I know some things fell apart in the second half, obviously, but against Air Force, you were able to create, as a defense, some key turnovers, even to start the second half, where, like you said, with a triple option, the ball's exchanging hands a lot. There's a lot of opportunity to create some error defensively. You mentioned earlier how your defense for the past few weeks hasn't created a turnover defensively. It's all been from special teams, muff punts, onside kicks, and whatnot. Got to be looking at chops a little bit defensively as well, trying to create some turnovers.
Well, it's big, you know, and then the guys, if they go in, they have to really kind of peel their ears back and, you know, and work on getting the ball out. You know, you talk about it, but you got to see it. You got to see guys early on, and we got to keep messaging them that the entire game, getting that ball out. So we want to be really aggressive. We want to, you know, fist that ball as many times as we can, you know, ripping it out from the backside of it. And if we do that, and if we do get a turnover, it'll go into their head, and that's one of the biggest things. You know, when people keep talking to you about turning it over and turning it over and turning it over, now you go out and don't create any, they start to gain confidence. You go out and create one early, that right there may create the second one just because of the lack of confidence.
More than 20 years, the Rebel program, as far as sports are concerned, Mr. Mark Wallington, the sports information director. Of course, they changed that title a lot. They changed titles like you change your oil. But the fact is that he's been the main man for the media as they go between for a long time. And he's our special guest right now on the Tony Sanchez Show on Learfield.
Mark Wallington, join us in this segment of the program, the Senior Athletics Administrator for Communications. What does that job mean for the person tuning in, Mark, eavesdropping right now, who might not know what your job is?
Well, it's had a lot of different names through the years. Sports Information Director, SID, Media Relations. They've kind of gone over to communications now because we do a lot more than information with social media. We do a lot of the, we're in charge of the website, the social media, the Twitter, the game program, the media guides, the statistics, and mainly being a liaison with the media so that they get to cover the Rebel teams. And we all have different teams, and mine is football and the two tennis teams at UNLV.
All right. Now, I noticed the media guide is certainly for football is really an impressive piece of work. How much help do you have with that?
Well, you know, we used to do media guides for every sport, and with web-based media guides now, we're kind of going away from that. We only print them for football and men's basketball and men's golf because Dwayne Knight still likes to get a hard copy. It is a three-month project. It involves me and whoever the assistant football communications representative is at the time, and then a graphic artist. So it is the biggest project I do every year, yeah.
All right, now, you started with the university in what year? You went to University of Florida, and you've been here for how long?
I came out of here. I got my master's at the University of Florida, got a nine-month internship at UNLV in 1993, and I'm still waiting for that internship to end.
You may be setting a record here, folks, the longest going on a quarter century right here. So the next question, Mark, looking back on all those years, and this is the big anniversary, 50 years, but you've been here for almost half that time. What are one or two moments for you that stand out?
Yeah, this is our 50th season, and this is my 25th, so exactly half, which I'm real proud of, and kind of become the historian of the program because I've been through a lot of coaches and a lot of players. Unfortunately, too many losses, and now we're obviously seeing that turnaround under Tony Sanchez. You know, we've been to three bowls during my 25 years, and that might be one of the fewest in the country of any program during that time, so we need to get that count up. But that game against Reno in 1994 here, at Sam Boyd, we were a 20-something point underdog. It not only did we beat Reno, get the cannon for the first time in many years, not only did we beat our rival, but it won us the conference championship and knocked Reno out of the bowl game. So we went to the Las Vegas Bowl instead of them by winning that game in a last-second fashion. That was the best game I've ever seen played here.
miracle at Waco? Is that the best finish you've ever seen?
Yeah, we've had some crazy finishes, good and bad, during my time. But, yeah, Kev, I was down on the sideline, and that was John Robinson's second game. We had won the first game at North Texas the week before, went right back to Texas for week two, and we let the game get away with us from us. And then Kevin Steele, the coach at Baylor at the time, got greedy and tried to run up the score. And Kevin Thomas instead took a 100-yard fumble the other way. And, you know, they threw a flag, and we thought, oh, no, here we go. They're going to call this back. But it was just for celebration. So that was quite a celebration. One of the most amazing finishes, I'd say, in college football history.
Mark Wallington, our guest. You can call him any number of things, including sports information director. They seem to change the title now and then. Mark, do you have a favorite sport?
Oh, well, you know, as you said, I went to the University of Florida, so you don't have a choice. It's going to be college football, to me, is the greatest sport in the world. I don't get to follow. I love the Minnesota Vikings, but I don't get to follow them because I'm working every Sunday. So it's college football first, second, and third for me.
Okay. As far as people that you've worked with, if you could name one or two that stand out also for you over the years.
Well, you know, we talk about John Robinson a lot, and he's everything you hear about him. Great man, great football mind, wonderful personality. I miss him a lot. I'm glad he's still doing great things at USC, still active, still in an announcing game, still flying across the country doing games. I love Coach Robinson, just one of the great characters in UNLV history and a Hall of Famer. And any story you hear about John Robinson is true.
Finally, Rebels getting ready to break ground very soon on a new practice facility. Should be very impressive from what we've seen. And in a couple of years, hopefully to share the Raiders stadium. To what degree do you think, Mark, that will change the culture of UNLV football?
It's going to be an instant change when it happens, Russ. When Fertitta opens in a year, that is going to transform the program more than the stadium. And people might not realize why. That's because at the stadium, you're there 6 days a year. But you're there every day if you're a player and a coach at that Fertitta football complex. And we go around even the Mountain West and see some of these facilities at Utah State and Wyoming that they're building. And UNLV has fallen behind in that aspect. And that's what Tony Sanchez is changing. That building, you hear Game Changer a lot, but that is a mandatory for us moving forward to be competitive in the Mountain West and beyond. So the stadium going to be great, but the Fertitta football complex is really going to just transform the program.
Mark, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Sure, we'll see you soon.
Mark Wallington, our guest, back with a whole lot more when the show continues after this on Learfield.
Welcome back to the Tony Sanchez Radio Show, live from Born and Raised, the official home of the Rebels on the road, along with my broadcasting partner for the Rebel broadcast, and it's the one and only Caleb Herring. Finley Toyota congratulates UNLV football on its 50th anniversary. Findlay Toyota and UNLV Athletics. Together, they make one great team. And a reminder, Rebel fans, post your fan pictures with the hashtag LesOlsonIT, and you might win a $100 Amazon gift card. Les Olson Company hopes you win. Visit LesOlsonIT.com for contest details. Les Olson Company, your office technology partner. Always a great atmosphere here at Born and Raised. TV's all over the place, great food. You would never know. If you come in here blindfolded and order something, you'd never know you're in a sports bar. Never.
It's good food. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and some decent drinks, as we all know.
Absolutely. Yes, just water, though, with, you know, usually.
Oh, is that what they're calling it now? Okay.
Just water.
Rebels coming up against New Mexico this Friday, 6:30 Pacific time, 7:30 in the Mountain Time Zone, where the Rebels reside in the Lobos, it is, reside in Albuquerque. Defensively, the Lobos have given up a lot of points, Coach, but in fairness to them, part of that is because of all those turnovers.
Absolutely, it is. I mean, it's such a momentum swing in a game, you know, and especially when you do it in your own red zone. So it's affected the amount of points they've scored and the amount of points they've given up.
All right. One of the things, though, is they've got a tremendously talented punter, Corey Bierkes, who's one of the top five punters in the nation. So, you know, one of the issues the Lobos have had now, they've been able to turn things around by getting their punter to come in here and flip the field.
And he does a tremendous job at it. I mean, you know, we're watching a couple weeks ago back in, I believe it was the Fresno game we're watching, and they're punting the ball, and he's kicking it from his own 27, and Fresno comes out and has to start on their own 25. I mean, that's a heck of a, you know, flip of a field. So, you know, on the flip side, though, you got great opportunities for returns. You know, sometimes you can outkick the coverage. You got to do a really, really good job, though, of making sure that you get him to kick the ball fast. You know what I'm saying? You don't want him to have all day. It doesn't mean you need to rush it all the time, but those outside contain guys have to make sure they get up the field and put enough pressure on him that he's not going to stand there back there all day. Let that coverage get down the field to go with those 50, 60-yard kicks. I mean, again, you want to make sure the coverage team's occupied blocking while that ball's getting down there to give yourself time to set up the return.
On the flip side, on your punt team, I'm sure you'd like to see a little bit more backed-up opportunities for New Mexico than we've seen in the past from punting them, getting them pinned down deep in their own territory.
It's been an interesting year. I mean, with the injuries with on the kicking crew and different guys rolling in and out. I mean, you know, last week I believe we averaged 31 yards a punt, and that's just unacceptable. So we've got to do a better job. I mean, like I said, there's going to be times where, you know, you got to feel comfortable, you know, being able to punt the ball and flip the field so you can make some, you know, sound decisions. It's tough when you're making a decision on whether or not you're going to go forward, what you're going to do, and a lot of it's based on, you know, not having a ton of confidence in that you're going to be able to, you know, execute down there. So we got to do a really good job with that. And I know our guys are capable. Evan's getting healthier and healthier. Did it all year last year. Started off really well this year. I think the injuries got to him a little bit. But he had a good week of practice, so I think he'll be all right.
Quarterback situation?
Both those guys are ready to go. We've seen Johnny the last bunch of weeks. He's flung the ball around the yard, done some good things. We all know how special Armani is and what he's capable of doing. So get ready to see both.
All right. Now, the last time the Rebels were in Albuquerque, 2013, you talk about a shootout. How about a 100-point game, basically? 56-42, the Rebels won. Quarterback Caleb Herring.
Who's that guy?
Yeah. Where is he now? Oh, wait, he's here.
We may shoot him up.
It was a fun game, man. Shootouts are always a quarterback's dream. You want to battle it out, shoot it out. Good, we came out on top. Rebels got a chance to do the same thing here this week.
All right, obviously, assignment, football in play now for the Rebels going up against that triple option.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, that's what we're going to be tasked with all night. It's going to be assignment sound. I mean, they're going to give us a bunch of different things, bunch of different looks, bunch of different formations, but it's still going to be the triple, so we got to do a really good job at that and then not fall asleep on any of those play-action passes.
Coach, we'll see you on the plane.
All right, go Rebs.
Caleb.
I'll be on the plane, too.
Yes. We'll save you a seat. All right. Want to thank Omari, who really helped us out here engineering, and also Mark Seidel back in the Lotus Studios. Again, Rebels in New Mexico coming up this Friday at 6:30. This is the Tony Sanchez Radio Show from born and raised in Learfield.
Tony Sanchez Show, brought to you by Country Financial. At Country Financial, we know planning for your future can feel overwhelming, but something this important deserves attention. Take simple steps today at countryfinancial.com/simple steps. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Rebel Sports Network.